the meeting of the Conference Committee on Senate File 958 to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. We've covered a number of major differences between the House and Senate in Article 2. Today, we're looking for a couple of additional language items and a handful of money items that are in one body but not in the other, or approached in a different style. We also have a series of rider language from Articles 1 that we'd like to hear about. If we don't get to them, we can definitely do them another day. Senator Westrum is occupied in the Environment Committee at this moment, so we're going to skip around the posted agenda and move straight to what's indicated as Roman numeral number 4, the overview of House Emerging Farmers and Urban Ag Senate Beginning Farmers. So I'll defer to Colby Sullivan for an initial walkthrough on page and line and an overview, and then presentations.
Mr. Chair, this is Nancy. Number four is the overview of food differences, food access.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. I've got something else indicated here. Okay, the overview of food access differences. Thank you. To the farm to school healthy eating. I'll defer to Colby for an initial walkthrough on page and line and overview.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members of the conference committee, the differences in this area are just a few. On page R9 of the side-by-side, the House would increase the agri farm to school maximum allocation from the base of $400,000 per year to $800,000 per year. The Senate would also increase that farm to school allocation, but the increase would be from $400,000 base to $500,000 per year. And then on R18, the House would continue base level funding of $325,000 per year for the Healthy Eating Here at Home or Market Bucks program. And the Senate does not fund the Healthy Eating Here at Home program within this bill.
Representative Lippert, do you have a presentation for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I can speak to both of these provisions briefly, and then I believe Commissioner Peterson and Kathy Zeman are here to say a little bit more about farm to school and market bucks, respectively. So as far as farm to school is concerned, these markets are very good for our students across the state. They're good for local communities, and they're good for farmers who are growing food for local communities too. So for our students, farm to school provides fresh, healthier food from local producers for students in our schools and in early care settings. One community-supported agriculture farm family in the Northfield area was able to triple their business because they had access to school markets. And so we can see the difference that farm to school can make, both for nutrition for students, but also for the businesses of local farmers too. And then these are dollars that really stay in the local community. So it strengthens local economies across the state as well. So there are many wins in this farm to school program. Another concern is just the food security and nutrition needs in our schools because of COVID. And we feel like this is a good time to be investing more in farm to school. As far as the Market Bucks program is concerned, or the Healthy Eating Here at Home program, its more official name, this is a critical and key food access program. We need to make sure that everyone, regardless of race or income, has as much access to fresh, healthy, local food as possible, and Market Bucks helps with that. It allows the SNAP dollars, SNAP customers, to stretch their dollars at the farmer's market, to participate in the farmer's markets more fully, and it's a key food access program And Kathy Zeenan can say more about that as well. I think at first I'll turn to Commissioner Peterson or someone from the department to say more about Pharma School.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members, and Tom Peterson, Commissioner with the Department of Agriculture. And the Pharma School program has been, of course, very popular and longstanding with the department. And I'm going to have Mr. Huguenin talk about that. And he can also answer the questions about the Market Bucks program. One thought on the Market Bucks program, too, is and I think he can talk about this, too. They used to be in the state government budget. It's been around for quite a while, actually, and it got moved into our budget area. And so I just he can maybe talk about that. But I think it's a good thing for the committees to know that this is something that has been around, but it hasn't been traditionally in our budget. It's a very successful program. I think that you probably all have received a letter that I think had well over 100 different signatures from farmers markets really throughout the state. I think I personally attended maybe 20 markets last year, and that was a top topic, especially in the outstate market. So if it's all right, Mr. Chair, Mr. Huguenin could expound on both of those.
Thank you, Mr. Huguenin. Please identify yourself and continue with some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Paul Huguenin. I'm the director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division. On Farm to School, probably the one thing I would add is that the legislature changed one of the provisions of it in the last session, which allows us to reimburse schools for actually purchasing products, which was a substantial change. And I think really allowed new ground to be broken and some real progress to be made and for new districts to begin participating in Pharma School. And that we think is a very exciting exciting addition to Pharma School. Traditionally, our efforts were focused entirely on helping districts purchase equipment, which allowed them to purchase and store more locally grown and raised food products. But being able to help reimburse schools for actually purchasing products from Minnesota farmers was a big step forward. On the healthy eating grants, as Representative Lippert and Commissioner Peterson said, you know, this is something that the department has not administered before. It's certainly a fantastic program, and I know Kathy Zeenan can talk to the details of that. So it's a wonderful program. I don't know that... I know why it was switched in 2 years ago and put into the ag budget for this cycle, but that has always been administered by the Minnesota Humanities Center, and certainly that would be the ideal place to have it administered with a pass-through grant. But that would be my two comments on those two items.
Thank you, Mr. Huguenin. Is Kathy Zeenan available for comments?
I am.
Director Zeman, please identify yourself and proceed with your comments.
Good morning, all. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your permission, I'd like to keep my video off. My internet is not playing nicely this morning, so it would be easier if I didn't crash and burn. So, good morning, all. My name is Kathy Zeman. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Farmers Market Association and owner of Simple Harvest Farm Organics just south of Northfield in Rice County. MFMA has about 314 farmers markets with 4,000 or so vendors operating at any given time in Minnesota's 87 counties. These farmers markets generate millions of dollars in sales annually between the local food farmer and food maker vendors and their community shoppers. Minnesota's Market Bucks program help support this entire local food shed industry. In 2020, even during COVID-19, 12,759 new shoppers came to their community farmers markets to use their SNAP and Market Buck dollars to buy fresh, affordable local foods. Market Bucks help SNAP customers increase their spending power at farmers markets in two ways, with a dollar-for-dollar match up to $10 per swipe of their own SNAP spending. So, for example, if a SNAP participant spends 20 of their SNAP dollars at a farmer's market, they receive $10 in Market Bucks for a total of $30 to spend that day to buy fresh local food. Additionally, we hand out $10 incentive gift certificates that are distributed throughout the state to encourage SNAP customers to shop for groceries at their local farmers markets. As with everything else, COVID-19 impacted farmers markets last year. While we saw about a 9% decrease in markets offering market bucks, we saw a 67% increase of SNAP dollars spent at markets and a 31% increase of market bucks. This in turn created a 26% increase in economic activity in the state. So the numbers. In 2019, SNAP customers spent a little over $164,000 in SNAP and a little over $140,000 in market bucks, creating over $546,000 in additional economic activity. In 2020, SNAP customers jumped up and spent over $276,000 in SNAP and over $184,000 in market bucks, creating over $691,000 in additional economic activity in the communities. The increase in use highlights the fact that the market bucks program was a staple to many low-income Minnesotans and farmers during the economic downturn. So market bucks are a win-win-win for Minnesota. Customers win, our shoppers win, by being able to stretch their buying power at farmers markets, making fresh local food more affordable for low-income residents. Farmers win by bringing in new customers and making more sales. And communities win with the increased local economic activity, a stronger sense of community, and healthier people. The Market Bucks funding that passes through to Hunger Solutions Minnesota, who provides some matching in-kind funds to adequately administer the program, not only funds the Market Bucks, but also provides mini grants to the farmers markets who offer SNAP and Market Bucks at their markets, because it's a pretty big expense for a market to offer SNAP and Market Bucks. And then Hunger Solutions compiles all the data for reporting out these very substantial measurable outcomes. Eliminating funding for market bucks would remove the ability of low-income individuals to buy healthy local foods at farmers markets and force them to purchase and eat less healthy food and rely more on food shelves for help making their food budget work. As it stands, food shelves are pushed to capacity, serving a record 3.8 million visits annually. Food shelves also do not always have access to the quantity of fresh and local foods like farmers markets. Individuals using Market Bucks have come to count on the program to help them afford the fresh, healthy food that they want to eat to be able to feed their family. Losing this benefit in the midst of unprecedented levels of food insecurity would be devastating. Just as importantly, though, is the economic value that Market Bucks brings to our local food farmers and food makers. I cannot state strongly enough the difference SNAP and Market Buck dollars bring to our local farmers. In 2020, 99 participating farmers market locations reported over $461,000 in market bucks and SNAP. That $461,000 went directly to our local farmers and our food makers. I urge you to preserve the funding for healthy eating here at home, aka market bucks, in your final budget bill to ensure the market bucks program continues to make a critical impact around Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other testifiers on this issue? Okay, comments from the committee. I guess I would ask the Senate version. There was a decision to eliminate the healthy eating. I'm just wondering about that. If there's anybody that can help me with that. I guess I would directly address Senator Westrum on that issue.
Chair Sundin, can you restate that question?
The healthy eating seems to have been missed in your version of the bill. I'm just want to see what led you to the decision to eliminate the healthy eating.
Well, probably a budget target is one aspect, and two, these grants were fairly new, as I recall, but I'd have to go back and look at it. But our budget target, and we've we had quite a demand for biofuel infrastructure and bio incentives and some other aspects. So that was all, I think, played into the factors.
You're saying there, Senator Westrom, that we're just waiting for more financial news to include the healthy eating in your version?
Well, I don't know if that's, I don't know if I'd read that into it for sure. I mean, there might be other places that are more needing ag funding. I mean, it's all up for discussion, but it'd have to be part of a bigger picture, I think. But I do, when we have time for questions, I'd have a question for the testifier as well.
I guess that's where we're at right now. Senator Westrom, please.
So, Mr. Chair, and just want to understand this a little bit more with these healthy eating grants. Is this money on top of the SNAP benefits somebody's already receiving, or could you explain that a little bit more? So are we really, somebody that might have $500 of SNAP benefits, are we actually upping their allowed benefits by giving them a extra amount of money? That's kind of a puzzle to some of us.
Yeah, I guess I would defer to Representative Lippert. Do you have some input on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Westrom and Kathy Zeman may be able to jump in as well. I mean, I think it's really important to reform, in my view, it's really important to ensure access to healthy local foods, and because those foods can sometimes be more expensive, it's important to have that additional support. But we see great benefits for healthier communities, great benefits for healthier local economies. So there are multiple benefits that come with that investment as well. But I'll defer to Kathy Zeman. She may have more to say here.
Director Zeman, can you flesh out this for the senator?
Yes, thank you, Senator Westrom. So it'd be SNAP dollars are given to the SNAP participants, and then when they come to a farmer's market, they will receive up to $10. So if they swipe their card for $10, they're going to get $10 in market bucks. If they swipe their card that day for $50, they're still only going to get the $10 bump. So it is $10 per visit additional for to help out their budget, and then again, that money passes through to our farmers. Does that help?
Yeah. So, thanks. Yeah, it does. So it's just $10 a visit, same day visits, or come in the morning and come back just before lunch. Is it multiple visits in a day? And I guess how do we know they're healthier? If they're potatoes from somebody growing in Mankato versus somebody growing in St. Cloud versus commercial potato grown in the Red River Valley. How do we establish that healthy that they're healthier to justify these dollars? Maybe Representative Lippert knows, but if that's the reason we're selling them.
Director Zeman, a response.
Yes, thank you, Representative Sundin. So, Senator Westrom, we know that as the minute that you pick a produce out of the garden, it begins to dry out, right? And so it begins to lose nutrients. We know, for instance, that spinach at day 7, a week after it's been picked, already has lost about 30-40% of its nutrients. So the quicker and the sooner you can get our produce to, you know, from the field to the table, it's much more nutrient dense. So that's where that healthy part comes from. It's the fact that we are serving Minnesota food to Minnesota folks and not making it travel that I think the average right now is 1,500 miles. So when we bring in potatoes from Idaho or California, just the fact that they've traveled that far and gone through all of that transportation system has decreased a little bit of their nutrients. in much the same way that as we hold root crops over, like the squash that I am currently eating, is a little bit less nutrient dense because it's been in my root cellar since, you know, October of last year. So as produce, as fresh produce, so that's why it's important to get to shorten that distance. Food miles matter. Food miles really matter when we're talking about nutrient density and everything else on the planet. And that's why it's important for Market Bucks to help at the local level. That $10 gets more of our local food from our local farmers into our local families.
So, Mr. Chair, just a couple of comments or questions, follow up. So that is my understanding. So the farmers market is the most direct from the producer to the consumer, cutting out the middleman, but yet we're subsidizing to pay for higher priced products. That should be the cheapest way we find products, not having any middlemen in there and not having to transport them in from 1500 miles away. I'm just not sure we're convinced that that this subsidy is the best program and use of money and the ag budget, but where am I missing the point of the, because we're talking pretty much direct sales here, aren't we?
We are. I'm sorry, Representative Sundin. Yeah, Senator Westrum, we are. They are direct sales. And here's where the difference lies. So many of our local farmers are not don't get any other subsidies, correct? So big ag, our big ag farmers receive direct subsidies. Little ag doesn't. And so this is that little tiny piece of the subsidies that would go toward, that would go to your local food farmers. So I think, for instance, you're discussing, you know, $2 million in the biofuel, to increase the biofuel industry. I would also propose that, you know, investing $2 million in the local food shed to build out all of our local food farmers and our local food makers, where we grow our food in Minnesota and we eat it here in Minnesota, would be a good bargain, would be an excellent way to grow the economic activity in the state. So not only does Market Bucks help on that fresh product, I think where sometimes you see local food be more expensive is when it is niche, some of those niche markets like certified organic food will be higher because your costs are so much higher. But if you're at a farmer's market, many of those farmer's markets will come in at or below grocery store prices because we have been able to cut out that middle person. So it's not just that part of it that some of those products would be higher. Some of them.
Senator Westrum, anything further?
I don't, Mr. Chair, the last bit of the testifier's comments cut out, so I don't know if it was my internet or her internet, but follow up, I guess, if she can still hear me. Just how about frozen foods? Do we sell any of them at the farmer's market? I'm assuming generally not, but you talked about the nutrition and once vegetables and foods are frozen, it pretty much captures their nutrients at that level. And so I guess I'd be interested in the comment. Do we sell them at the farmer's market? Looks like she's having internet trouble, Mr. Chair.
Director Zeman, if you're still online, evidently not. Representative Lippert or any of the department people, could they weigh in on this, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum. Yes, I mean, I think frozen vegetables may not be found at farmers markets as frequently, but certainly frozen meat is commonly sold at farmers markets.
Thank you. Senator Westrum?
I think we can go to other questions for now, Mr. Chair. Senators or reps.
Great. Senator Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long has this program been in existence? Maybe I missed that at the beginning. I'm not sure.
Who wants to grab that one? Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman, I am not sure. It's maybe Paul knows. It's definitely been in for a few years, though.
Mr. Yerkinen?
Yeah, Mr. Chair members, I don't know the exact answer to that. I know it's not a new program, but because the department hasn't administered it, I don't know the date that it actually launched, but it's been, I would say it's been certainly more than 5 years, but hopefully Kathy can jump back on because she would know that for sure.
Internet issues today. Yes.
Even there's a couple of questions outstanding here. So.
Okay. So I do know that it went to Hunger Solutions in 2015. That's when they began gathering data. Before that, it had gone through Blue Cross Blue Shield. So this program has been around, I'm guessing, about 10 years. And it just said it went from that other committee, Representative Lippert. I don't know the name of that other committee. I apologize, but it came to MDA just recently.
Follow up for Director Zeman.
Mr. Chair. Go ahead, Senator Anderson.
Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. According to line 16.30 or 16.29, shows here it was transferred from the Minnesota Humanities Center, and I guess that's where the Hunger Solutions was located. And from what Ms. Zeman is saying, this was started in 2015. Do we have any statistics to show benefits from this other than just conversation?
Director Zeman?
We do. Thank you, Representative Sundin and Senator Anderson. We do. Hunger Solutions has a wonderful publication that shows the amount of the market bucks spent every year, the amount of matching SNAP dollars, and then the economic activity. I could forward you that. If we need it today, we can get that to you today.
So, Mr.
Thank,
Chair.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure what these, I mean, you're, sounds like you're just taking SNAP cards or SNAP certificates that you have and you're adding another $10 to it. You could just as well just make it all SNAP dollars rather than renaming something money bucks or market bucks, whatever they want to call it. So I'm just curious as to the reasoning for. If you spend $10, you get another $10. If you spend $20, you get another $10. Whatever you spent, I mean, maybe is there a minimum to the amount that you have to spend at a market, farm market, to get these extra $10? Or just if I spend a dollar, I get $10. I get $11 to spend. Is that what it is?
Director Seaman.
Thank you. No, it is only a dollar to dollar match. So if you only spent $1, you get $1. You spend $2, you get $2, and then you get up to $10. That's the match.
So, Mr. Chair, I think that we could just as well just put the extra $10 that you're talking about or the extra match right in with the SNAP dollars rather than come up with a new product.
Thanks, Senator.
Conversation. That's my thoughts.
Thanks, Senator. Senator Murphy, please. You're on mute.
You hear me okay now?
Perfectly, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm in the Senate retiring room right now. So there was a question asked about the numbers of people who are living food insecure in Minnesota right now. And according to Feeding America, there are 461,000 Minnesotans, including 161,000 children who are living in Minnesota right now who are food insecure. And one of the paradoxes of this debate for me is that we often say that it is Minnesota farmers who are feeding the world, and yet we know there are Minnesota farm families and Minnesotans living in rural places who are food insecure. And that seems really backwards to me. The value of this program is the ability to take market bucks to a farmer's market and get fresh local food. And there is a virtuous circle to that in that there are farmers who do local, especially vegetable farming, who can't get into commercial markets because of the contracts that are set between the agriculture industry and grocery chains. And so the place where people go are to farmers markets. And so with this, we are not only supporting food insecure people, but we're also supporting local Minnesota farmers who are growing crops and have found a market for those crops. I have talked before about my dad. He grew up on a farm. He lives in town now, but he has this place that he calls the Palace, which is really an old shed behind a Pizza Hut. And the people who live in that town really wish that old shed would go away. That's where he stores his tractors, and that's where he grows his tomatoes and potatoes. And we have always had fresh potatoes and fresh tomatoes because my dad grew up on a farm, and he has always believed in feeding us fresh food. And the difference between the potatoes from the hills that he plants versus the potatoes that we get in the grocery store are different. And that is the food that is available to people through this program. So I really do think it's important for us to think about the value of this, not only for food insecure people, but for local farmers who have found a niche marketplace and that virtuous circle that pumps a little bit more money into farmers' pockets in greater Minnesota. That's why I think it's so smart. And I hope that while there are a number of, you know, issues, and I understand and appreciate Senator Anderson's tip of the hat, tip snap, I think we have found a niche that is supporting rural farmers who are taking their things to farmers' markets, and that is a value for us that I think we should uphold, and that's why I think this is an important program. So, Chair Sundin, I just wanted to make sure I put that onto the record so that we have that perspective as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Anything further, questions to the department or Representative Lippert on this? Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Lippert, please.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Representative Lippert's up right now.
Oh, okay. I thought he was concluding. That's fine. Just come back to me before we leave, please.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Representative Sundin. Lippert. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair Sundin. So just a note, the SNAP program is a federal program, so I don't think that we can change that. And Market Bucks is a program that is working, has been working very well, so I think continuing it makes a lot of sense. And people who can't afford produce who are on SNAP, have trouble affording food, period. And so this is extremely helpful to them. And Senator Murphy's comments, just had me thinking about stories my dad was telling us. He grew up on a farm, and they grew all their own produce, and they also sold what they had left over. And he said, I knew that we would never go hungry. And I think over time, we've lost this sort of local foods infrastructure that our communities really had and depended on and kind of took for granted. And we need to find ways to strengthen that and rebuild that. And so this, both Farm to School and Market Bucks are ways that we can do that with farmers who are growing foods for local communities. It's a growing and extremely vital area of our agricultural economy in general. And we need to be supporting that too. And as we do, we are supporting our communities in multiple ways. And through these programs, we're supporting people who are food insecure in Minnesota, which is extremely important. So appreciated the discussion today and appreciate the value of the programs that we're talking about right now.
Senator Western.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Zeman, just a couple of follow-ups following Senator Anderson's questions, too. So our understanding is the farmers market, you can use your SNAP dollars to buy at all of them, or just the ones that the Market Bucks are available at, or what's the status of that? Can't SNAP dollars be used at all the farmers markets?
Thank you. So SNAP, being able to offer SNAP at a farmer's market is really expensive. It runs our markets about $1,500 out of the market budget on average to run that program. So only about a third of our markets have raised enough money. So they can't pay it out of their typical operation budget. It's just a heavy lift. So SNAP and Market Bucks really help SNAP participants, the people in our communities who need local fresh food, and it helps our farmers. But the market itself, that is a hit. That is a big lift. So that's why only about a third of our markets have been able to raise enough money. And we lean on all of our other partners. We lean on food shelves. We lean on SHIP. We lean on, you know, any kind of grant that we can get, but that's on an average. Because in order to offer SNAP, so quickly, in order to offer SNAP, in the past we had to buy the machine. Now the Department of Health provides a free one, and then there's transactional fees, and then you have to buy wooden tokens, and you have to have containers for that, and you have to buy receipts, and you have to run Quicken so that you can do all the reports, and you have to do a PCI report. That is why it's not offered at every market. Would we love it to be offered at every market? Absolutely. But it is just not financially possible for some of our markets. Two-thirds of our markets in the state have volunteer market managers. The market itself is not financially stable enough to even hire someone to be their manager. So that's why it's, SNAP is only at about a third of the markets. And I also should throw on there, Market Bucks is national. They call it Double Up Bucks in other states, but it is a nationwide effort to shore up SNAP across all farmers markets across the U.S.
Okay, Ms. Zeman, would a SNAP, a person using SNAP could go to a farmers market and buy, spend their money there if they wanted to, as opposed to going to a grocery store, or a mixture of both. Whether we have Market Bucks or not, they can still use SNAP at the farmers market, correct?
That is correct. Oh, sorry. That is correct. They could. We do know from our market managers, the reports that we do with our market managers, that once Market Bucks showed up, more SNAP customers came to farmers markets. If Market Bucks would go away, we would anticipate that we would lose many of those SNAP customers, because that little $10 incentive is a big incentive.
Last question. Ms. Zeman, explain the $10 per visit. Is that per day? So what would stop somebody from coming in at 8 in the morning, buying something or having coffee, and coming back at 9 or 10 and buying another $10 item to maximize their $10? Am I understanding this right? If somebody wanted to essentially game the system, they'd be best off buying $10 or $11 at a time per transaction, and then getting the $10 match every time, as opposed to buying $50 and getting $10. What stops that from happening on a daily basis?
Thank you. The fact that there's not enough money in either of their systems. Just think about that. A SNAP participant only has so much money on their card, and so they have to think ahead of how they're going to budget that. So they know they're going to come to the farmer's market to get X amount of dollars. They're not going to spend all of their SNAP dollars that day. And they most like, if you think about SNAP participants, I work with a lot of them. They also don't have a lot of hours in the day to run back and forth to a market, right, to shop. So theoretically, maybe you could game the system, but in essence, it's really hard because you are short on time and you're short on both your SNAP dollars and the Market Buck dollars. Now I wish I had Leah Gardner from Hunger Solutions on the call with me. Maybe she's out there in the universe, but I do not know that rule, if they can only use it once a day or multiple times a day, but I do know it's eventually there's just not enough money left in that. In the system to be able to game the system.
So Ms. Zeman, that would be helpful to know, but when you said there's not enough money, does each recipient only get $10 at one point in time, or what if they went 3 weeks in a row? Would they not have that $10 each Saturday that they went? How do they know how many $10 Market Bucks they can get in a month or a summer?
Thank you. Based on history, Hunger Solutions will send out so many Market Bucks per market to start with, and then when those Market Bucks are used up that day, because they're literally a piece of paper, and you have to redeem them. So that's how that happens.
Oh,
so there's a budget per market. There's a budget per market to start with. Yep.
So Mr. Chair and Ms. Zeman, the recipients are not getting them with their card. The person checking them out is giving them a $10 coupon for the transaction?
Correct. At market. Correct.
Thank you. Anything further, Senator Wistrom?
Yeah, I do. That leads to a few more questions, but Mr. Chair, Ms. Demon, so how does that work? Farmers markets that in our areas, you buy from each vendor typically. It's not a central point of sale. How does each vendor then get 10 market buy coupons to give to every buyer, or how does that work? Because I mean, I was just at farmers markets last year and I bought some fruit from one and vegetables from another and potatoes from somebody else. And how does that work? That you only get $10 for one of those purchases?
Okay.
Director Zeman?
All right. So this explains the huge cost to a market. You put your finger nicely on the issue. So in the old days, food stamps were paper. And food stamp folks could go to a vendor at a farmer's market and do that transaction directly with that farmer, right? But then the USDA turned it from paper to a plastic card, the EBT cards, electronic benefit transfer cards, just like any other EBT card that we have, a debit card, a credit card. And all of a sudden, one stamp participant has one plastic card, but the vendors do not have card reading machines. So then we had to come up with the system of doing grants to all of the states and then from states to the markets. So at every market that offers SNAP as a market level, the market has an informational booth. You have one booth or two booths, maybe if you're a big market. And at that booth, you have the card reader machine. Some markets have two or three machines, depending on how big they are, depending on how much volume they do. And a SNAP participant walks up to the information booth, and they swipe their card. They type in their PIN number. They swipe their card, and then they type in how many dollars they want off their card that day. And then the market manager gives them the paper receipt, so the SNAP participant has the paper receipt. And let's say that the SNAP participant wanted $20. Then the market gives them 20 coins, 20 wooden nickels or plastic nickels. And then with those 20 coins, tokens, and then the $10 extra for market bucks, they go spend that with the different vendors. So in that case, they're buying the food from vendors with little wooden tokens. And at the end of the day, all of the vendors then gather their tokens up and go back to the informational booth. And they've counted out their tokens and they hand it back to the market manager. And the market manager, she writes them a receipt. And then hopefully so that the vendor knows, okay, I turned in 50 tokens today. And then within a week or 2 weeks, some markets take up to a month. Then that vendor gets reimbursed up to a month. The other piece of this is in order for a market to offer SNAP, they have to have an account with the USDA FNS, the Food and Nutrition Service. And there has to be someone who gives the USDA FNS their personal social security number and guarantees them that no fraud will ever happen. And then that person then anchors that whole system at the market. And then when the SNAP participant swipes their card, FNS automatically dumps that amount of money into the market's separate account for SNAP. And it's critical you have a separate account for SNAP so that the SNAP dollars stay separate from your other operating money. And that's how that money transfers from FNS to a market. And then the transaction happens at a market with little wooden tokens. So, and that's, again, the point here is that that's the expense of a market. It takes all of that work in order to allow SNAP to happen at markets. And to get ahead of this, too, you know, WIC is also something, WIC dollars, can happen at a market. And now WIC right now that's all in paper form, but coming up, they want to also transfer to a plastic card. And so that'll be something else that farmers markets will have to figure out how to negotiate and manage, another plastic card. Hopefully it's all the same system, but we don't know yet.
Thank you. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Senator Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Zeman, you mentioned that the participant who has a SNAP card comes to an information booth or a customer service booth and SNAP, they swipe the card, they basically tell the information booth they want to spend $20 today or $50 or whatever. They give them these tokens. When they go to each vendor, whether it's for meat or it's vegetables or it's fruit, do then they each vendor gives, if they spend $10 at their booth, do they get them the certificate for $10 at that booth based on the number of tokens that were there, or do they get the $10 based on the number of, amount of money that was asked for at the information booth?
It's at that. Sorry.
Director Zeman, please.
Senator Anderson, all of that token happens at the informational booth. So when you leave the information booth, you'll have your 20 SNAP dollars and then your 10 market bucks and in tokens, and then you'll fail to figure out. You can spend that. You might only spend 10 of your, you might only spend two of your market buck tokens with the Apple vendor, and you might spend a couple more at the egg vendor. You know, that's all up to the SNAP participant, but all of that happens at that at your informational booth at the market.
So, Mr. Anderson, is that certificate then a $10? Because you said for every dollar, there's a dollar given in market bucks. So up to $10, do they have then 10 $1 market bucks to utilize at the egg vendor or at the fruit vendor? Is that how it works?
Yes, correct.
Director Zeman.
Sorry. Yes, okay. Correct.
All right. Thank you much.
Representative Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I just want to remind folks that this is an ag committee where I have always had a lot of great respect for this committee because we focus a lot of our attention on farmers. And this conversation centering on poor people who rely on SNAP benefits is interesting to me because that's, you know, how we're worried about people gaming the system or whatnot. These are people who don't have money to afford healthy food, who are relying on federal dollars, such as SNAP benefits, to support farmers. And the market box is a way to attract more consumers to farmers markets that are already struggling financially. And, you know, so what if people are using federal dollars to spend more on farmers? That's more money for us. Let's think rationally on how this supports farmers. We want more money to be spent on farmers. If Market Box attracts more consumers, more SNAP benefits to come to farmers markets to spend federal dollars on our farmers, that's even better for us. So let's focus on that and not worry too much on a problem that may not even exist. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay. Thank you. It was good discussion. Good questions. We'll revert back to page one of the agenda. It's also indicated as being Roman numeral four. There's a House overview of the House Emerging Farmers and Urban Ag Senate Beginning Farmers. Does Colby Sullivan have any comments on this for an initial walkthrough?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I can quickly highlight the provisions in the two bodies' bills in this area. The House has a number of provisions in this category. On page R6, the House funds a governor's proposal of $150,000 for the biennium, and that would create a pilot farmland access team project that would assist beginning and existing farmers with farmland transition issues. And it would also fund an upgrade one time to the FarmLink web application to better connect beginning and existing farmers. And then on page R7, the House, if you'll recall from the earlier walkthrough, creates a dedicated emerging farmer account in the agricultural fund. And R7 of the House bill transfers $10,000 each year to that account to support the work of the emerging farmer working group. Then next on R7, the House appropriates $150,000 each year to establish a new emerging farmer office at the Department of Agriculture, which would include a full-time emerging farmer coordinator. And the House specifies that of the $150,000 each year, $25,000 each year is for translation services. On R9, the House retains the base rider language from prior funding bills that authorizes the department to use agri dollars for urban agriculture development. And the House also doubles the prior cap for this allocation for urban agriculture from $300,000 per year to $600,000 per year. And then finally, the House on R22 has language establishing the emerging farmer account and also language authorizing the Department of Agriculture to accept private donations on behalf of the Emerging Farmer Working Group. Senate language in this area, on R9, the Senate eliminates the base agri rider that authorizes $300,000 per year for urban agriculture. And on R12, the Senate language would require the Department of Agriculture to use $500,000 of the agri appropriation each year for grants to beginning farmers. That's the end of the provisions in this area, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Vang, do you have some comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm happy to present on the emerging farmers and urban ag provisions. This is a high priority for members of our caucus. We see this as a necessary investment for the future of ag. All my life, I've grown up around farmers. I did not grow up around a farm, but I grew up around farmers who had to rent land from farmers. And I've grown up with farmers who never really got the kind of access or relationship white farmers had with their local units of government. Being a second-term member on this committee, I'm amazed by the vast amount of resources and support we have for our farmers. I believe that is something that we share strongly in this committee, is our commitment to our farmers. But what I hope to bring to this committee is also the farmers who are left out in this process. Much of these recommendations are directly from farmers, particularly farmers who have experienced additional barriers from truly thriving in the ag economy. Furthermore, the pandemic has also shown a weak point in our food system. Our consolidation and reliance in large production reveals if there's one hiccup, everything else also tumbles. If we learned anything during this pandemic, it's that diversity in our system is our best asset. I'm glad we are quick to support small meat processing plants and the need to expand it and support farmers who raise livestock. But also, let's not forget about the farmers who grow our produce. Having a healthy population doesn't just come from consuming meat, but also, like, our doctors always say, making sure we eat our fruits and vegetables. Urban ag has also presented itself to be a quiet winner in this crisis. As we saw consumers look to local foods and buying more locally, urban ag is also becoming home for new and beginning and emerging farmers, as farmers are finding it tough to get access to land in rural Minnesota. We need farmers. The bottom line is that we need farmers, and it is our job to open opportunities for people to become farmers and keep the ag economy vibrant for all types of crises we go through, whether it be another public health crisis, climate change, an aging workforce, and so on. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I will defer the rest of my testimony to Assistant Commissioner Patrice Bailey. Thank you.
Commissioner Bailey, please. Is Commissioner Bailey available? There he is. Okay.
What about now?
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Pierre Sundin and Representative Vang, for the time. It is crucial, the times that we're living in regards to supporting emerging farmers, just because not only is our baby boomers retiring at a faster rate, but we have a lot more emerging farmers that are beginning to want to become not only farmers, but producers and entrepreneurs. And, with the ag census coming next year, we really hope to see the increase of Black farmers go from 39 Black farmers to a exponential higher number. This is very dear to the state. This is very dear to MDA to actually make this right, to make sure that we are seeing everybody regardless of their zip code within Minnesota, so that they can be able to actually have prosperity within agriculture. And these dollars will allow us to reach more people in underserved communities, but it actually allows us to take care of our fellow Minnesotans in a way that hasn't been done before. And I constantly hear from various communities that agriculture is never here. We don't know anything about agriculture. And personally, I would love to change that, especially as someone that's come from New York City. And even though I study agriculture, I didn't see agriculture. So it's really important to be able to look through the lens of someone else who hasn't seen agriculture yet either, actually realize the dream that they can have within agriculture in Minnesota. So with that, I just want to say thank you so much. These dollars are extremely crucial to us, NDA, doing our work, making sure the working group members are sustained, and they're able to also tell this story throughout the state.
Thank you, Commissioner Bailey.
Thank you.
Senator Westrom, comments? Any further discussion on the emerging farmers? Okay, very well. Senator Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to know who makes up the farmland access teams that's in the language. When I grew up on the farm, we always had, through FFA and through 4-H, we always had the University of Minnesota Extension out of the county, and they had people that came from the county and from the University of Minnesota to come out to help us with our, as young people, we didn't get to go into 4-H until we were 8 or 9 years of age, but they would always come out twice a year to give us tips and ideas of how to grow our vegetables, keep our yards looking nice, keep our property looking and they always had field days that the University of Minnesota did. I'm wondering, are we displacing our extension of the University of Minnesota by these farm access teams? And when it says teams with an S, how many people are involved with it?
Commissioner Bailey, would you like to address that?
Yes. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Anderson, for that question. The issue is that it's really not an issue that U of M actually continues to support farmers across the state. Currently, we're in talks with Keith Olander.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Do you have two devices going? We're getting a lot of feedback. If you could
I just have the one, sir.
Okay, continue then. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. So we're in the process of working with Keith Olander for Central Lakes Community College on having a farm business management program within the metro that also will work with our farm advocates as well in being able to reach more emerging farmers. As there are more emerging farmers that are beginning to acquire land, we definitely need to connect them, as we have been with the University of Minnesota farm advocates, but we also have to connect them with a farm business management person, instructor, in order to keep them successful as they begin their journey within agriculture. So those relationships continue to be strong. So the farm advocates do amazing work, and we're constantly talking to them on the phone weekly to be able to find out what's happening on the ground and any ways that we can be able to support more of those initiatives.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson,
Mr. Bailey, what are the farmland access teams? What are they made up of?
Mr. Bailey, please.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thanks so much, Senator Anderson. I'm also hearing the feedback. Our farmland advocates are made up of other groups that are experts within whether it's farm mediation, farmer lender mediation, or whether it's a FBM instructor that also has a lot of knowledge within various areas that can help emerging farmers. So it's a conglomerate of different groups of farmers to be able to help answer questions, be able to guide emerging farmers throughout the process. So, you know, we want to continue to grow the farmer farm advocates, but we want to make sure that we don't leave anybody out. We want to make sure that we reach everybody, and currently we're not able to do that in the way that we would love to do it. And we constantly hear, you know, from the farm advocates, also from our emerging farmer working group members, that we need to be able to be accessible and to be seen by various underrepresented communities and our indigenous communities as well, in regards to being able to have our farm advocates do the work that they do best.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
I think Mr. Huguenin wants to talk.
Excuse me. Mr. Huguenin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Anderson, to answer your question about the farmland access teams and extension, just a quick bit of background. The farmland access teams are going to be modeled after the dairy profitability teams, which means the number of people on it will be somewhere between probably 3 and 5 folks. And in many cases, it could include somebody from extension. But the idea behind farmland access teams is to work with the retiring farmer, the exiting farmer, as well as the new farmer, whether that's a family member, whether that's an emerging farmer, or somebody who wants to get, another person wants to get into farming. So it could be extension, certainly would be a farm business management instructor in all likelihood, could be a local attorney who can offer guidance in terms of the land transaction. And so that's the idea here. So this would be a pilot project to see if these teams can be effective at working with the retiring farmer and the new farmer. So the makeup of the teams would vary depending on the situation, but certainly it would include local experts, whether that's extension, farm business management, attorneys, et cetera. Hopefully that gets to your question.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are these farmland access teams volunteers, or are they going to get paid?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, good question. So typically the way it works is they get a very small stipend, but they are not getting paid what they would normally get paid. And in the case of, say, somebody who works for extension or for another government agency, I mean, they would be paid by that agency. But for somebody who's a private individual who is in a business, the way it would typically work, say, for the dairy profitability teams is they would get a small stipend, but they would be contributing a significant amount of their time as well.
So, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Huguenin, so what's the difference between these farmland access teams and the Department of University of Minnesota Extension? Because I recall with my father, who basically built his dairy barn with the help of the extension office and people that the extension office recommended to contact as far as lawyers or other people in agriculture. Why are we diminishing the ability of the extension office to do their job by having these extra people involved with this whole thing?
Mr. Huguenin?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, this in no way would diminish anything Extension could do, but in the case of farm transitions, Extension does not have the resources to provide the variety of expertise that goes into farmland transitions. To transition land between owners, especially non-family members, is a very complex project that takes often many years. And so it takes a variety of expertise, and any one person just simply wouldn't have that. And so this is about assembling a team, literally a team of people with different expertise that can help make that transition work. So it could be Extension involved if they have somebody in the area that can be that has expertise. But as a general rule, they don't have this kind of full-time expertise to work that intensively.
Well, Mr. Chair, when my father and my grandfather, I'm getting feedback. When my grandfather transferred the land over to my father to take over farming, it was done through Extension and the recommendations of proper attorneys and bankers. And to me, the Extension agent that we had a very knowledgeable background on different sources needed to make the transfer and make the required resources available to my father and my grandfather at the time of the transfer. Of course, this was back in the 50s, but it's still, to me, we're adding bureaucracy that we don't need to add when we already got a bureaucracy in place called the University of Minnesota Extension. So that's my comments.
Thank you. Good discussion. I see Representative Lippert has his hand up. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was having trouble getting off mute. So I'll just make a couple of comments here of what I'm hearing about and noticing in my district and in southeast Minnesota. So we have new American immigrants, new American communities, people who want to farm, have a farming background. They want to get into farming, and they're having trouble accessing land. So whatever infrastructure we have in place, clearly it's not adequate. We need more support for helping transition this farmland and help farmers access farms. So I think this effort on teams and a coordinator, more coordination is important. Also, we have new American communities who want culturally specific foods that can be difficult to access. And so helping new immigrant communities, new American communities access farmland will help with that. That's an economic opportunity, not just for these communities, but for our whole state. And finally, I would just say, I think we need to make sure we have a broad lens when we're thinking about agriculture, who our farmers are and what agriculture is. And urban agriculture is a part of that. Anything that's helping food get to consumers, whether they're at the other side of the world or whether next door, is something that we should be focusing on. And these initiatives will help with that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We can revert to the original order on the agenda here. And under number three, we've got adoption of compromise proposals, if there are any. And I'd like to hear from Representative Vang. Do we have agreement on the cottage food issue?
Mr. Chair, yes, Ms. Senator Matthews and I just got off a phone call, and so we've reached an agreement, so I can move the adoption of the cottage food provisions if that's how you want to proceed first.
Would you like to, I guess we'd like to hear from Mr. Sullivan or Mr. Knopf, to give page and line, and then we can entertain a motion for adoption. Mr. Sullivan, please.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not familiar with the components of the agreement at this point. Maybe Mr. Knopf is.
Mr. Knopf, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom here.
Oh, Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Knopf has been engaged in some of the
rewrites or the drafting of it. So I think Colby's right. But so Mr. Knopf, I think, would be helpful to weigh in on this.
Mr. Knopf, available at this time.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, I had drafted something up yesterday, I think, on this. But there was also some tweaks that the Department of Agriculture was asking for. So I'm not sure if this amendment is ready to go yet. I haven't heard back from anybody about what to, about any changes to make and what I did on the 5th. So I don't know. Joel has this. I don't have any way to get it out to the committee members. I think Joel does. It's just a GK0004 amendment, which is a generic amendment, but can be adopted by the conference committee to include, to replace the provisions that both sides have. But there were some issues over the processed pet treats in there, and that the department brought up, and I don't know that the authors want all of those tweaks that the department sent over. They only want some of them. And I was just reading an email that it looks like some are okay, but some are not. So I'd have to hear more. Amendment could be sent out, they can do that. But I'm not sure it's ready to be adopted right now.
Okay, thanks for that input. That being the case, Representative Vang, we can continue with other committee work and see if there's the language is before us before the end of the meeting here.
Mr. Chair, I can give a little bit of update. So, Mr. Knopf, I should have forwarded you that email and said I forwarded to Mr. Sullivan instead on the latest agreement. And so I can... and you've been the one who's been working on it, so I should afford it to you first. So the Senator Matthews, I did agree on adopting the amendment, the GK0004 that you sent to the both of us. And then in regards to the MDA tweaks, I guess staff can help clarify this, whether I could just do an oral amendment. Senator Matthews, I did talk over it, and we think that we can agree to taking their tweaks, and also and regarding to the third concern they have with the direct sales on subdivision, direct sales to consumers on the subdivision 2 of the pet treat bill. On the Senate language, that we can delete that portion. So let me know if that makes sense.
Well, they can weigh in on this. Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, the one issue with that is you eliminate that, but the department was asking for additional restrictions, such as the dollar amount of sales in a year, the training provisions, and other things, which aren't included in the pet treat provision, which is in a separate chapter of law. And so you don't want to pick up any of the cottage food provisions. If that's the case, we can just delete that from the amendment. But it doesn't address all of the department's concerns that they brought up, but that's up to you guys what you want to do.
Mr. Chair, the department never spoke to me about the additional changes to the main cottage food provision. So so I'm not too familiar with what Mr. Knopf spoken about, but with what is emailed to me on the amendment to the GK004 is what Senator Matthews and I agreed on moving forward, and the committee yesterday when the department brought up about the pet consistent language between the package labeling, that we've spoken about that and made and agreed to take those suggestions. So that's as far as
okay, well. So, okay, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair and members, so Representative Vang, what you've agreed to then is to basically drop subdivision two, or just drop the reference, I guess. So you're basically saying that they may sell the exempt directly to consumers, and then we can just strike or delete in accordance with section 28A.152 subdivision two. And then what you also want to do is that the sign or the placard or the labeled instead of the name home address, but allow the registration number to be used. We'd add that as an or, similar to what the cottage food. So those two changes you want to do, but nothing else from that email.
Hey, Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, I think perhaps it'll be best if we take this up again tomorrow. And let's regroup to get clarity on the language and what we're discussing. We can go from there. I think with everything being remote and done virtually, there could be some gaps in communication. And so I think that it would be easier if we just, after committee, we'll just regroup and just make sure that we have everything in order before we move to adoption.
Thanks for those conversations. I see Senator Westrom has.
Mr. Chair, can I just make a quick comment?
Make it brief. Senator Westrom is on hold here.
I understand that. All I want to say is just get me any changes you want to that amendment, and I can get a new one drafted, and that would work out really well.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, that's consistent with, I think we are really close. Just some technical questions, I think, here. I've asked my staff to get on phone with Mr. Knopf here while we continue on other topics. And I think they could actually just talk and get clarification. And maybe Ms. Vang, Representative Vang, could just step on a call with them quick while we're continuing. I think we might have it by the time we're done here even, but there are just a couple things that I think technical issues that we're kind of talking over here that would be helpful just to make sure Colby and Greg are on the same page. We do have a question on the one part, if there's a cross-reference needed or not. It's just, again, a technical issue, whether the department language makes sense to drop. If it's no problem with it, there's no problem with us, but we do have a question, and that's what our staff's going to talk to Greg about. So I'd suggest if we just temporarily hold up on this and move on to other topics. We might even have it by the time we're ready to adjourn.
Great. Hopefully we can see something like this developed by probably 11:40 or so. So we have a few minutes to discuss the final product. Next up, we have the garage guys discussion on that. And I think we're in the same place as far as progress on the final product. I'm happy to report that the county guys, the garage guys, have come to an agreement on the numbers and dollar amounts that were involved. But in the proposed amendment, they left out a couple of important items. One was the CWD, and as importantly, the registration for garage operators. So that we're not quite there on that one either. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, part of the Senate's proposal in that, also with the garage guys, though, was to not, that other policy language was troubling to the Senate. Part of the agreement to the dollar cap and the proposed language you had given us, the Senate position would be that let's adopt this agreeable language, but not add in the other policy language, registration and CWD to, the CWD is a big, I wonder how they're going to do it. And if that's kind of a new emerging matter, and hunters are supposed to be doing that potentially, but, that's part of the reason these garage guys are garage guys. They're not local butcher shops. But So that was part of the proposal, but that the Senate would agree to the dollar cap that the House had originally as part of this language that was sent to us 2 days ago. But so we'd be ready to adopt that language. The county folks said they'd stay neutral on it, but they aren't pushing for it either. So if that would be workable, I think we could adopt that language. But to go forward with registrations and stuff, that gets to be problematic.
You are correct. It is problematic. There's a great desire amongst a number of people to maintain that registration and the CWD language. So if hearing no motion to adopt that, I would propose that we keep working on this and see if we can come to something that would go quickly through the committee based on an agreement. Senator Westrum.
All right. I guess, Mr. Chair, we made the move to take the House proposed language conditioned on dropping those others. So if you're saying you want that and then more, we might be stepping backwards here instead of trying to come to agreement. So I thought we were making a good faith step forward, but that'd be too bad.
Yeah, it'd be one step forward and two steps back. We continue to work on this, Senator?
I guess so. Yeah, we'll have to, and maybe we'll go back to the Senate 90-day period. Might be a better way to start then.
Okay, the hash goes back into the frying pan.
All right.
Thank you. We can continue on with what's indicated as number 5, an overview of the meat processing. It's a House Agriculture Utilization Research Institute meat specialist language, the Senate butchery program, as well as I'll defer to Colby Sullivan for a walkthrough, page and line, and an overview.
Mr. Chair and members, and Mr. Chair, you've outlined the language well. On page R19, the House would provide an additional $150,000 above base each year to AURI for a meat scientist. And the Senate on page R17 would appropriate $200,000 one time in fiscal 2022 for a meat cutting and butchery program at Central Lakes College.
We can hear from Ken Scogan with the RE. He's the Director of Government and Industry Relations. Mr. Scogan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan Scogan, Director of Government and Industry Relations for the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, AURI. As this conference committee knows, the livestock sector represents an integral segment of Minnesota agriculture. And on a larger scale, the meat processing and product development sector is a huge economic driver in Minnesota agriculture. One of AURI's areas of expertise is food, and AURI has historically employed a meat scientist to assist Minnesota entrepreneurs and businesses in industry initiatives, product development, and processing assistance, but has been without a person in this role since late 2017. We have continued to service the industry by providing some training to a food scientist to provide assistance to clients, but that approach just does not substitute for a fully trained meat scientist to work with the industry. AURI already has a meat lab asset in Marshall, Minnesota. Unfortunately, without the meat scientist, this asset is underutilized at this time. So this request also is to provide funding to implement new programs and collaborations. In 2020, AURI hired a third party to conduct a survey, and that included 15 livestock industry stakeholders to identify gaps between 2018 to the current time. The response was a resounding yes. They're eager to have AURI add a meat scientist once again. Additionally, results from a 2013 AURI study further reinforced several points from the 2020 work, including some training needs and technical assistance to startups to navigate the steps to start a new local meat processing business. Some of the key areas of assistance that were identified and program development from the industry assessment included needs for product marketing assistance, assistance to meet growing demand for local meats, product formulations for niche opportunities, including kosher and halal, providing scale-up assistance, labeling assistance, HACCP plan development and documentation needs, inspection assistance to navigate state and federal requirements, especially as local processors look to sell in the interstate markets. AURIA would also like to move into some more educational opportunities, including collaborating with universities on workforce development and education outreach programs, especially in the proposed processing and butchering programs at some of the small colleges around the state, developing partnerships with equipment providers to provide training and hands-on demos at a central site, cutting and fabrication courses, and then oversee the AURI Entrepreneur in Residence program at the Meat Lab in Marshall, where entrepreneurs could actually, who do not have or cannot find product development space, can come into our lab and work on their products and processes. And a meat scientist would allow us to do all of that. These funds would allow us to immediately move forward in hiring a full-time meat scientist to assist the livestock and small meat processing and industry, as the networks and assets are already in place to do the work. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we would appreciate your thoughtful consideration of this request.
Thank you for your input, Mr. Scogan. That's terrific. Senator Westrum, do you have someone on tap to fill us in on your positions?
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Root is on for the butchery program.
So Mr. Chair, why don't we let Senator Root talk about the program? It was her bill that was in our final omnibus bill. So,
Senator Root. She was here earlier. We'll give her a minute. Half a minute.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Olander from Staples Technical College might be with us, and he could proceed if Senator Root is gone. I thought he had joined us earlier, but Nancy, are you able to confirm that?
Okay. In the meanwhile, Director Olander, would you please identify yourself and offer what your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Keith Olander, Director of AgCentric, which is the Center of Excellence for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Really here to support the collaboration and work that we can support AURI, Minnesota Department of Ag, and of course our two-year colleges in the area of meat cutting and butchery. There is not a lot of programming in the state at all at the two-year level. And so I'm going to ask Dave Endicott, if we can, just to come on for a few minutes from Central East College specifically to share intentions with the dollars.
Please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dave Endicott. I'm the Dean of Staples Campus, Staples CTE Nursing and Grants for Central Lakes College. We are proposing a one-semester 18-credit meat cutting and butchery program. The reasons for that, as we have had numerous conversations over the course of the year, we have discovered that livestock producers are experiencing a significant shortage in the ability to get their animals to be processed in a timely fashion. We have also heard from retail markets, the grocery store chains, that they're experiencing a shortage of workforce to meet the demands that they have in their meat cutting programs. So workforce is a key challenge. Right now, there are only, that we're aware of, seven training programs at the higher ed level throughout the whole North American continent. And the closest one to us is in Wisconsin Tech over in Madison, Wisconsin at this time. And there is a program being developed in Montana and some others that have come up lately that may be developed as well. COVID certainly has exacerbated that issue. Our proposal is an 18-credit, one-semester program that would include courses in meat cutting, including everything from slaughter to finished product. We'd be looking at value-added processing, sausages, hams, deli, also looking at the halal and potentially kosher markets to help provide workforce in those areas. Food safety and sanitation will be a key point, as well as the meat industry communication. meat merchandising and marketing, and some entrepreneurship internship opportunities for students to get hands-on experiences. We are fortunate at Central Lakes College to have a certified kitchen. We started a culinary program this past year, and so it'll naturally fit into that, as well as our ag programs that we are continuing to develop on our campus. So a student in our program will be able to experience meat cutting and butchery in many different ways, learning about farm practices, learning how to identify and inspect and process different carcasses. We also have the opportunity for them to get those internships in a variety of different settings in our region. We have got a number of partners that are willing to partner with us to help provide the students. We certainly have identified a need that is significant. The question then becomes, do we have students to bring into a program to fill that need? What we are finding is we can have partners that will help us to bring students in and develop that workforce. When they're done, they should be able to do some butcher apprenticeships, food science technician, food safety specialist, meat carvers, state and federal meat inspectors. There would be more training that would have to follow for that. Meat market managers, retail, wholesale meat processors and cutters, perhaps entrepreneurship business owners moving in. We know we have a number of folks in our area that are close to retiring that have that small and medium-sized meat processing facility that are looking for people to come and move into those, and then harvest floor employees. Our program has, unfortunately, it's not a cheap startup. We have some significant needs, and that's where this funding would become important for us to continue forward with this plan. We have some infrastructure needs. We'd have to remodel some spaces in order to meet the needs, refrigeration, rails and racks, storage space, processing equipment such as saws, boning tables, grinders, scales, patty machines, stuffer, smoker, slicer, a lot of those different kinds of pieces, and they all cost money. We are looking at a fall of 22 start for our program. We have gone through, the letter of intent, notice of intent to Minnesota State has been approved. We're in the process of developing curriculum and advisory boards to continue that. And by August of this year, we should have all of that in place and ready to move forward for fall of 22.
Thank you, Mr. Endicott. Keith Olander, do you have a follow-up with that or something in conjunction with this?
Mr. Chair, if I could just add a couple of comments. Mr. Endicott did do a nice job of outlining it. It's really this idea we're trying to be cognizant of what industry need is, as exacerbated by COVID, as well as reach student success here and where these come together. Again, looking to how do we get a mobile kill unit in conjunction with folks like AURI. And we also know that MDA has some initiatives in this area. So we believe that there's a great collaboration could be created between the two-year colleges, really trying to meet, again, industry need and student success. So thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's probably why we're bringing to the Ag Committee more specifically than higher ed, but appreciate consideration nonetheless.
Thank you. I do have some questions regarding the higher ed contribution to this effort. You know, since you're a Minnesota State Ag Center of Excellence, can you tell us if the Minnesota State system has provided any funding, additional funding for this new program? And I find it unusual that the state ag budget would be paying for curriculum development and a facility construction to develop a program rather than the system paying for it itself. So I guess was higher ed committee approached on this? And if the state ag budget doesn't provide this and the program was approved by Minnesota State, will they pay for it? Or what's the next step on this? Both Mr. Olander and Mr. Endicott, whoever wants to tackle that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this date, no, Minnesota State has not put forth any dollars specifically for this, except for what Central Lakes and even Ridgewater in their investigation stages have invested in time going forward on that side. This really came through the Agriculture Committee because of the partners involved. It is heavily driven by the ag industry. They have approached both colleges requesting that this come forward and want to accelerate it. And we find that the Agriculture Committee has certainly want to meet those needs or demands, and so that's where they requested that we come this direction, specific to our partners at Minnesota Farmers Union, probably helping drive us this way. Nonetheless, moving forward with that, the other side I would offer is Minnesota State. We can do it through Minnesota State. It would take a little longer time to move through their budgeting process, and it usually takes us 2 to 4 years to get in the planning stages. And we're concerned that industry and students are going to get lost in that process in timing. And so, again, just appreciate the ability to be in front and hoping for some acceleration here in terms of moving forward.
I'm certain, thank you, Mr. Olander. I'm certain that you're aware that we have to protect our budgets here, department by department. And I'm a little bit put out by the fact that there's no investment from Minnesota State system on this. And, the goals are laudable, absolutely. But, we need to protect our budgets as well. So is there input from the did you have a response there? Anything further, Mr. Olander?
No, sorry, I'll take my hand down. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Anderson had a question. Senator Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. just wanted to either Mr. Endicott or Mr. Olander. There's a lot of people in the state that are deer hunters, and myself included, along with my sons and grandsons who love to deer hunt. But more and more, trying to find a place to have those deer processed is becoming a major, it's not easy to find them, and you got to travel 45 minutes to find somebody to process unless you do it yourself. And we've done it in the past, but after a while, it gets to be a little bit challenging. So just asking if that might be part of the curriculum if and when you get up and running. And I have a follow-up question.
Mr. Olander, please.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to defer to Dave Endicott on this one.
Okay, Mr. Endicott, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, certainly we are looking at that opportunity to train folks that would maybe be on a smaller, I heard you speaking about the garage kinds of things earlier. That training would also be a possibility within this program, either through being a part of the actual semester-long certificate program or through some customized training that could be developed alongside with it. So, yes, certainly there would be a hope that we could help fulfill that need as well.
Anything further, Senator Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's going to take 2 years to get this up and running. By going through AURI, because of Mr. Scogin's, former Senator Scogin's testimony, this will improve the process of getting this curriculum in place. Is that my understanding?
Mr. Scott?
As Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, yeah, we believe that the timetable can be moved up through funding sources that come through AURI or MDA that enable us to access those dollars and help build the structure of the program. The curriculum can be built and is being built as we speak. So it's more the infrastructure pieces and equipment pieces that we are looking for. And as I'm sure you are aware, the process is through Minnesota State due to the size of the system. I tend to take a longer amount of time to get those things done. Mr. Olander, I don't know if you've got something to add there.
I do not.
Thank
Senator
you,
Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Senator Western, please.
Mr. Chair, just a couple of comments to your comment and then a question. But Mr. Chair, one of the things I know talking with Commissioner Peterson, part of this might be some federal dollars, American Recovery Act dollars that could help kickstart this meat cutting program and the mobile slaughterhouse. So we might want to just ask for comments from the department on this briefly to that end, because I think that becomes part of the equation in this bill and maybe some of the language we need to write either contingent on that or some flexibility with that if we were going to move forward, because the ag budget alone probably can't sustain this. So I share your sentiments or concerns with higher ed would need to eventually be able to take this on. But I think it would be, should be a self-sustaining curriculum once they get the equipment that would be part of this. And so I think for that reason, we've thought it's a good proposal. We'd like to see how we can work it together. AURI, I think, is sort of a separate proposal, although similar in that there could be synergies that result because of that. But Mr. Olander, just a couple of questions I've got. Would any of this training be able to be remote and not in the store or in the places where the meat cutting gets taken takes place? And then what do we estimate the cost per student would be if you have any of those that information?
Senator Olander, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, thank you for that. Yes, on the remote side, Senator Westrom, we're looking specifically around a mobile kill site, so that means that we would move in a customized or a remote type training setting specific to the kill process and training for that, as well as the internship components will also be remote, obviously, getting them out on the actual places where we have, whether it's the garage setups or actual production settings that we've got it within our region to be able to do that. Cost per student, if you take the Minnesota State credits, are about $200 per credit. So if you multiply that out by the 16 credit scenario, you can easily come up with the dollars. But of course, because it's a Higher Learning Commission approved program, it's also available for financial aid. And we expect that our industry partners have already committed scholarship dollars. So we, as far as cost, the 32 credits or the 16 credits at 200 would be the maximum. Everything could be bought down from sponsorships as we go forward. Mr. Endicott, did you want to allude to that at all or direct anything there?
Yeah, I think the other pieces. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The other piece of that would be the opportunity within the classroom instruction of doing remote learning via Zoom or via some other type of much as what we've done throughout this year with COVID. So there would be the opportunity at least for some of the classroom pieces to be done remotely. There's obviously got to be some hands-on experiences. I mean, this is a hands-on trade, so it can't entirely be done that way, but there will be those opportunities.
Thank you. Senator Westrom?
No, Mr. Chair, I just maybe if the department has any comment on how federal money may interplay with this opportunity or proposal, that'd be good.
Commissioner Peterson, do you have input, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Chairman Westrom's question, yes, we're very interested in this and the proposal we've been working on for American Rescue Plan. I think we could, we've thought about how to include the CLC piece in this, because I think it's really important. You know, when we had our CARES Act dollars last fall, we had people telling us that we'd like to apply for this. However, we need workers, you know, and so I really appreciate, you know, and whether this is the right piece or not, you know, or the right committee, we need workers. And so I appreciate the efforts to bring this forward. So I think in the federal dollars, you know, and again, we're waiting for guidance. We're hoping maybe actually to get a little bit today that we could perhaps do the mobile slaughter units. And we have through our CARES dollars bought some for farmers. So this is not a new thing. So, and then perhaps some tuition assistance because it's one time type thing. It's not going to go onward. To get people started in the program. So I think those are a couple of things that we're looking at, and we can have a discussion, or put some language in perhaps in the bill as we go forward. So thank you, Senator Westrom. I think that, you know, it's something we can work on. We are.
Thank you. I would have a question myself for Mr. Olander or Mr. Endicott. Through my experience in the building trades, I'm very familiar with the apprenticeship programs for training workers. And I know the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has an apprenticeship program for new hires in grocery stores. And this isn't an isolated apprenticeship program. It ranges from over in Wisconsin to throughout Minnesota, hundreds of stores, and into the Dakotas as well. And I'm just wondering if you've consulted with them or tried to tap into what they do and do something similar, because you're both serving the same industry. Have you had any contact or knowledge about the apprenticeship programs?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have visited with UFCW, and they are interested in partnering with us in order to provide scholarships for students to come into the program. And then instead of entering at an entry level into their meat cutting places, whether it be Cub Foods, Byerly and Lunds, whatever the business is, they would then enter into an apprenticeship program from this program after they've received their certificate. And then they would also have had part of their tuition paid through that company or through the union, and then with an expectation of staying on and then doing their apprenticeship within those businesses. So yes, that conversation's happened, and it sounds like we have a great opportunity for a partnership to help fill some of their workforce needs.
I guess I would ask then if they are receiving some kind of educational benefit, are they also committed to completion of an apprenticeship or a certification?
I would assume so, but those details have not been worked out at this point.
Yeah, my point is, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. Thank you. Senator Westrum, please.
Mr. Chair, first question, just Commissioner Peterson, on the federal money, do you anticipate that some of the equipment that might be able to be purchased for the Staples College with the federal money, if I recall our conversation correctly, that's a little what we're waiting on, but that's one potential opportunity. And then I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. I'd also like just to mention not just the UFCW, but also DALI, our Department of Labor and Industry, also has a apprenticeship program that we think that with, I think they're working on that too, where we could also tie this into that. So I think there's a lot of good pieces there, but we, the helping assist the purchase of the mobile slaughter would be something that we're trying to work out through that.
Senator Westrum.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson and Mr. Chair, just for the conference committee, conferees and, Mr. Olander and Commissioner Peterson, I've also got input from the Minnesota Grocers Association, who are very interested in this effort. They have been working with the Jobs Committee and working on some job training dollars through that committee, and so they would like to see some synergy between this and that jobs training money and. Also, the opportunity for maybe some of the meat cutting to be a hands-on training in the stores throughout the state, and I think that's one of the questions I've had from them is there a way to do some of this virtual? Perhaps students could be in a store in St. Cloud, even though the college instructors in Staples, and I guess maybe a little more pointed on that idea, but. For the committee and for all of us to see how we can work this together. The need for meat cutters is incredibly tight. And so I know our grocers just to deliver the products and get them out to the shelves and have it available for consumers would be a big issue. So just so we know that there's maybe some more synergy we can try to connect with those dollars. And so maybe just a question for Mr. Olander, just on the remote side a little bit more. Would that be a possibility, do you think, or foresee, or maybe not?
Mr. Olander, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrum, thank you. Yes, the remote learning is certainly something that I wouldn't say we perfected, but we certainly have improved over the past year, whether we wanted to or not. And so even when we get into the applied learning settings like meat cutting, we've become very creative in terms of how we deliver that. So again, I go back to Mr. Endicott's comments that this is a very hands-on program, so they're going to have a very good lab to work with on their end, but it's something that could be done in a remote setting to help augment the volume of students going through this particular program.
Very good. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Olander.
I've got notes here that this bill was carried in the Senate by Senator Rood. Is she available for comments? If not, we can move on.
I think she's on the Senate floor right now. We're in session also, Mr. Chair, so we're doing a little double time here. So
yeah, keep tap dancing, you bet. Next up, we have an overview of the House and Senate Biofuels infrastructure language. This is where we both have funding, but with a little bit difference in the language that we need to work out. Is Mr. Colby Sullivan available for an initial walkthrough?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. In this area, the House picks up the governor's recommendation to establish the Department of Agriculture, a new biofuels infrastructure financial assistance program, and a corresponding citizen advisory committee. And the House would fund the new program at $2 million per year, with up to $100,000 each year for the department's administration costs. And that can be found on lines R12 of the side-by-side, as well as, page R12 and page R40 through R43. The Senate language in this area is on page R10 of the side-by-side. The Senate would appropriate $3.5 million each year for grants to eligible petroleum retailers to replace or upgrade equipment as needed to store and dispense E25.
Good. Terrific. Comments from Senator Western, please. Senator Western's hand is up. Maybe he's voting on the House floor. In the House side, I'll report that Representative Paul Anderson, our friend, introduced the language, the House language, and he was well accepted. Any comments from, let's go to Bob Patton with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Patton, available?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps the commissioner might want to speak first, and I'll go second.
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I think just to boil down to the point, Mr. Patton can fill in the details. I really appreciate that both sides have this in, in some form or whatnot. I'll just tell you, I think what's important here is two issues. One is the account that's in the House side that we feel strongly about setting up the account, and having the account is an important piece for us. And then also the citizen committee is in the House side too as well. These were recommendations from the governor's biofuel task force, unanimous recommendations. However, understanding that having a large committee like that to dispense funds may not be necessary. We would, just like we do our other grants, we set up review committees, but it may not need to be 15 people. And so just kind of cutting to the chase a little bit on that, I think as we help look through at these bigger issues, I think this is something we could come together pretty quickly on. It's an important issue, and I really appreciate that we have this in here. But those are the issues, and Mr. Patton maybe can fill in a little bit on both of those. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Patton, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm Bob Patton. I'm supervisor of the Energy and Environment section in the Ag Marketing and Development Division of Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I helped with the Governor's Council on Biofuels process. I just wanted to fill in a little bit more rationale from the governor's council side of it for creating the program fund and the advisory group. Really what the council was looking for is a long-term funding source, hopefully, and a place to have that money reside. So that's really the importance of the fund, and the fund would be able to accommodate both state funds but also any private contributions. And you may be aware that the corn growers recently announced that they would be wanting to contribute $1 million to the biofuels infrastructure process. So it's contributions like that we could also hold in an account. The importance of the advisory committee to the council is really that it would be a stakeholder advisory committee, and it would be so it'd be representatives of the agricultural community, of the biofuels producers, but also the petroleum retailers. And the petroleum retailers have a big stake in this issue because there is a concern that a lot of the smaller chains and independent stations don't have the financial wherewithal to afford the infrastructure and really need the financial assistance to be able to be competitive and offer E15 and higher blends. So that's really part of the function of an advisory group like this would be to help us craft the criteria for the grants so that it would do the most good, and we'd get advice from those stakeholders on that. So that's what I have, and thanks very much.
Thank you. Anything else from the department? Okay. Questions or discussion on the infrastructure language? Okay. Thanks. It's nice to see some agreement coming on this. So, indicated as number 7, the overview of House biofuels incentives reporting language. Mr. Colby Sullivan, can you walk us through this?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. This language is House only, and it's on page R39 of the side-by-side. This is a change to the current reporting requirements for the bio-incentive program, which includes the advanced biofuel, renewable chemical, and biomass thermal energy production incentive programs. The additional language on the House side specifies that those who submit claims for payment under the program would have to provide additional information to the Department of Agriculture, would then report that information annually as part of the department's annual report on the bioincentive program. There are a number of different elements that must be reported under the House language, 10 different clauses. And if members would like, I could go into more detail, but otherwise I would just point you to the House language on page R39.
If members want to take a look at those 10, they're not commandments, 10 entries, please go ahead. If there's any questions on this, this language is came from Representative Hansen, who's offered as an amendment. It's an effort to get some reports back just to gauge the outcomes on the money that is spent. It goes along with the language prohibiting state grant funding to be used to pay for lobbyists. So this is a good accountability measure. Questions from Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colby, when is this report due?
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, the report is due by January 15th each year to the legislature.
Okay. Mr. Anderson. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Anything further? Okay. It's terrific. That wraps that one up. We do have time. That's terrific. A little bit of time in front of us. We can do an overview of House and Senate only, the riders. This is for discussion only. And Mr. Sullivan identified some rider language in Article 1 that appeared in one body or the other. In these, we're looking for language and not the funding attached to it. So if Mr. Sullivan would care to walk us through, that would be terrific. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, these are language differences that were not covered during Mr. Knopf and I's walkthrough of the side-by-side earlier in the first meeting of the conference committee. So these would likely be new differences to members. And the first one is on page R3 of the side-by-side. Both the House and the Senate would fully fund a governor's request for $110,000 additionally each year for meat and poultry inspection services. The Senate has a little extra language in this area on lines 4.9 to 4.13 on the left or Senate side of the side-by-side. The language encourages the Department of Agriculture to seek inspection waivers, matching federal dollars, and to offer more online inspections in this area. Mr. Chair,
can I ask what an online inspection is? Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure exactly what the Senate had in mind with this provision. Perhaps a senator would be willing
Mr. Chair.
To. Oh, Senator Western, please.
Mr. Chair, I could add a little bit to that. The idea is with COVID and just the need for inspectors, you know, all over the place, cutting down on windshield time. If there's parts of the process that could effectively be done, like we're doing a Zoom meeting here with the right equipment in a slaughter plant, maybe an online inspector could be in one central spot and ultimately watching over two or three sites at a time, or some types of efficiencies, especially on parts of the process that maybe aren't as critical of hands-on, if you will. And so that we just want to encourage that type of development and efficiency to avoid. I mean, one of the ways we get more meat cutting done is having the meat inspectors being available, and that windshield time is a big time kill, if you will. But it's times that some butcher plants can't be going ahead with killing or meat processing. So that's the idea behind it, to try to facilitate more technology being used for this field as well.
Thank you, Senator. To anyone that could answer the question, I guess I would just add that, you know, this good efficiency addition, quite possibly, has this been actually vetted through, or did you get input on the Senate side from inspectors? Is something like this even viable for the work they do? Because I'm not familiar with the work, you know, day-to-day work of an inspector.
Mr. Chair, just from memory, I'm recalling that I think there's some scenarios where they're already doing some of this, but I'd stand for the department to augment or add in what currently is being done or being looked at. But as I recall conversations last spring and summer, there was remote online ways they were trying to do some of these things.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner Peterson, can you help me out on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman. We are open to this. During COVID, if you think back about where we were again a year ago today, you know, we were exactly doing that, where we were talking with our plants because we wanted to also keep our inspectors safe. We wanted plants put in their protocols, again, big and small. You know, some plants are, of these custom plants may have two people, you know, working in them. Some may have many, many more. And so this was something that we did work on and try to do, but whether it's using a video, self-reporting, different things. There are certain things that we have to follow that are actually federal regulations because they're dedicated down to us. And so, but where we can find efficiencies, it does save us dollars. But, you know, keep in mind, this is food security and safety. And so there are things where we have to do this, but we are open to always trying to find solutions and work with the plants, as much as we can. So we did take a lot of these steps the last year as much as we could, you know, to also keep our employees safe, because we did unfortunately have employees contact coronavirus. And those are hard calls to get as commissioner or plants. That had to go down, and that was a tough situation. But, you know, just speaking more to just, you know, COVID has taught us that we can do some of these things virtually. And so, again, we're open to it, but we also have to just make sure that we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's with the USDA and FDA as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions on that particular issue? Okay, we can go to number two, the House and the Department Rewrite of the Dairy Development Rider. Mr. Sullivan, please review.
Mr. Chair and members, this language is on pages R4 to R6 of the side-by-side. Both the House and the Senate pick up the governor's recommendation to continue funding the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement and Dairy Business Planning Grant programs at the base level. And the Senate is carrying what appears to be the standard rider that the legislature has used in the past for this budget item. The House language was developed by Representative Paul Anderson in consultation with the Department of Agriculture in House committee. And I believe the essence of the change is to remove references to some kind of by now pretty dated session laws, 1997 and 2001, and instead to move the language behind these programs into the rider in the bill. And I believe at the same time to maybe make a couple updates to reflect the current operation of these programs.
Thank you. Any thoughts or comments from the committee on this? Okay, number three, we can go to the House and Senate mental health riders. Again, Mr. Sullivan, please.
Mr. Chair and members, the mental health riders are on page R6 of the side-by-side. The House and Senate have the same funding numbers, $50,000 each year. The House language is the rider, including the activities that were proposed by the governor and the department, and that's to support farmers and others in the agricultural community, including a 24-hour hotline, stigma reduction, and educational offerings. And the Senate language is a bit different in that it's for, the money would be for community outreach on farms and rural mental health services, service availability, 24-hour hotline, and mental health forums. So again, the money's the same, but the activities that the department would be required to carry out with these dollars differ between the two bills.
Thank you. Comments or questions on this issue? Number four, we're looking at the Senate report required for a GREET, potato and wild rice money. Mr. Knopf, would you review this, please, for us?
Mr. Chair, I think we have somebody else that can do that. Ms. Grunewald can do that for us.
Ms. Grunewald's available then. Identify yourself and add your testimony here.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Hannah Grunewald, the fiscal analyst with the Senate Agriculture Committee, and the Senate-only language includes a report for AgREIT. This shows up on the side-by-side R8 on lines 7.6 through 7.14. And the Senate language requires a report on potato breeding and wild rice breeding regarding the use of the grant money and to provide an update to the legislature on the status of research and related accomplishments.
Interesting. That wild rice breeding, is that a function up in Grand Rapids, Minnesota? Could you tell me?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. Mr. Knopf may be able to fill in for that.
Mr. Chair, Greg Knopf again. That's correct. It's thrown out of the Grand Rapids, their experiment station there.
That's interesting. I worked on that on those rice paddies back in 1976, I believe it was. I'm glad the program's still going. Okay. Moving on. Any questions on that committee? Okay. Number five, the Senate has got a $3 million annual cap for the buy incentive payments. Mr. Knopf, would you please educate us on that?
Mr. Chair, one of the reasons the Senate put that cap in there is if you analyze the caps that are within each program, there is some concern that somebody could get more than $3 million in a year. And $3 million was the cap for the ethanol program. So the Senate, Senator Westrum can talk about this too, but it was put in place because Senator Westrum was concerned that somebody might get more than $3 million in a year, depending. So they might be able to get the higher rate. I mean, it depends on what the source that they use, but we wanted to make sure that no one got more than $3 million in a year, which was the same as the ethanol program when that existed.
Senator Westrum, would you like to expand on that rationale?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf has recapped it pretty well. The Senate reflecting on the dollars that the ethanol program had put, essentially was the money for that Agri came from in the first place. But that program really was to help the small and middle-sized business get started, flourish, encourage the development of new biofuels, but not to be a way of life for their own. The only way to exist is with government subsidies ongoing. So $3 million was a good cap on the ethanol plants, and we feel it's a good balance, fiscal balance. Knowing there's only so many dollars, the idea is to help incubate multiple new small businesses that the plan is that they can stand on their own, not live on subsidies forever. And so we modeled it after the ethanol program, and we now have 10, 15 ethanol plants that still continue to thrive and churn in our state's economy, and none of them are on a program anymore of subsidies. So it's that type of model that we want to continue moving forward.
Thank you, Senator. I guess next up we've got the House Equity Report required for a GREET. You can be referred to on page 13 of your booklet. And we can I'd like to hear from Mr. Sullivan briefly.
Mr. Chair and members, this language on the House side requires by February of 2023 that the Department of Agriculture would report equity data and outcomes under the Agri and Agreet programs to the legislative committees with jurisdiction over ag finance.
Comments from Representative Vang. Anything on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a small provision that looks at, since Agreet also carries a lot of money, has a big pot of money from the legislature, just increases transparency on where the money is going and where the money is benefiting. And so that's just a minor report.
Thank you. Any questions on that? Okay. Number seven, the Senate provides that bioincentive tails may be used for the so far unused siting production incentive program referenced on page R13. I'd like to learn more about that myself. Mr. Knopf, could you educate us on this a bit?
Well, Mr. Chair, could you give me the page number again? I was working on something else.
I think it's on 13.
13? Yep. The siting is, I think that we've had that. I think that was part of the original RIER because there is a siting program in place. I don't think it's ever been used, but we had it in place in case there was somebody who wanted to build a siting plant in northern Minnesota. There actually was a company looking at it at one point. It's an old reference to it. I don't know that we need it. I've not heard about any siding manufacturer coming into the state to use that program. But it's just the Senate continues it because it was actually a Senate initiative a number of years ago, and it likely not being used, but we just continued to include it.
Well, there is a siding plant up in Two Harbors that produce a terrific product. If you want to come look at my garage, you can get firsthand knowledge of that. But there's another plant being proposed, my understanding is, up in the Grand Rapids area that might have oriented construction lumber, where they splice together or reconfigure the wood fibers and produce structural lumber. That's a proposal. Would they be available? Would money be available for something like that?
Well, Mr. Chair, the it had to. There's actually a statute for that, and they have to actually produce siding.
Right. Okay.
And not just any kind of lumber. There was talk of one in that same area. I'm not going to name the siding company, but it's a nationally known one that was thinking about locating in northern Minnesota, and that was put in place to try to help attract them here.
Thank you. On number eight, we have the House Second Harvest Rider. This is comes from Representative Jess Hansen. Can we hear from Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members, for the Second Harvest Rider language, both the House and the Senate picked up the additional provision that was added by the legislature in 2020 as part of a COVID-19 relief package. The legislature provided additional money to Second Harvest and provided that the money may also be used to purchase and distribute protein products. So the House and Senate both included that. And I think the Senate language appears to be the same as the language that was enacted last year. The House language is a little bit different, and it reflects a bill carried by Representative Jessica Hansen in the House, I believe with the support of Second Harvest Heartland. So the differences are on 15.6 on the Senate side. The Senate language specifies that the protein products that are purchased by Second Harvest for distribution to those in need must be surplus products when practicable. The House does not have that language. And then on 15.13 on the Senate side, the language says that to the extent practicable, the protein products that are purchased by Second Harvest must be acquired from Minnesota processors or producers. So there's a little bit of flexibility there. And the House language simply says that these products must be acquired from Minnesota processors and producers.
Okay. Any questions on this from the committee? Commissioner Peterson, I saw you had your hand up there. I'm sorry I missed that earlier. Do you have something to add or questions?
Mr. Chairman, members, sorry, he was back on the siting piece. And I was trying to find that in here, too, because there is another siting company that is looking at, just as the FYI, I've just learned about it in northern Minnesota. That could be an important piece, and it's kind of late breaking and everything, but I just wanted to FYI for the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Western, please.
Mr. Chair, just to touch on this briefly, the language that we did pass last year, I know we had worked through some of that, but we do think it's a prudent thing to try to find surplus product as much as possible when we're trying to buy bigger quantities and as much food to give out or have available for those in need. And so that's why we didn't understand the reason to take away that efficiency when possible or when practicable. We also like the idea of buying in Minnesota much as possible with the tax dollars of Minnesotans should be supporting our state. So I think we're just some comment on that. Thanks.
Understandable. Thank you. I guess we're down to number nine, the Senate Farm Safety $10,000 carve out for outreach.
Mr. Sullivan, any comments on this?
Mr. Chair, I would just note that the Senate, both the House and the Senate, pick up the governor's supplemental budget recommendation to fund the Farm Safety Grant and Outreach Program at $100,000 per year base. And the Senate just provides in addition that of the amount, $10,000 is for outreach, which may include creating and presenting a grain storage facility safety curriculum.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments on that? Senator Westrum, your hand is up.
Chair, I just have a bad memory to put my hand down. So, but no real further comment.
Your arm will get sore if you can leave your hand up that long. Okay.
You don't know how strong I am.
Yeah. I believe it. I think that's about it. Save any input on the cottage food language that we were working on earlier.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Westrum, please.
So, Mr. Chair, just on that, and then the cottage food, Joel, our staff, was talking with Greg, Mr. Knopf, and I think there's just more technical aspects that he needed to get written out and go through. And so I think there's just some technicalities that need to be figured out by the parties, and I think it'd be the most efficient to probably let them just circle it back one more time after Mr. Knopf's had a chance to incorporate some of them in so it's in writing. And he's been following Environment Committee and this committee, and I don't believe he's had time to do it while we've been in conference. So my advice would be that we let them just get it circled back so we have complete assurance that everything's good to go and there's no technical glitches with it, probably for next time to adopt. But that's my understanding of where we're at. Secondly, I have talked to Senator Murphy, and I think we've come to probably an agreement if you're agreeable with, and I understand MDA is okay with the sanitizer language that we could propose today at some point in time, but I just wanted to give you that update. That would be something we could do before we adjourn, that I think there is a clear path on.
You say you have language on the sanitizer issue?
We do, Mr. Chair, and my understanding, Senator Murphy, we sent her language. Essentially, it's her bill that she had introduced, one of the two bills she had introduced, and so we would be agreeable as that being the compromise language, and the MDA, I think, is as well. The only technical fix, I think, and I'd let staff weigh in on this, we might want to implement a retroactive date to April 1st, so we cover the last 5 weeks that the exemption for that sanitizer provision would be covered as well. But otherwise, we do have language.
Thank you. I'd like to hear about the language and hear from Senator Murphy on this, please. Senator Murphy, are you available?
This is, as I had mentioned before, language of the bill that I introduced in the first place. And Senator Westrum and I spoke yesterday. I've also spoken with the Department of Agriculture and believe that the language that you're going to see represents the compromise. It represents, I think, the intention that for those who are using sanitizers for COVID-related experiences, that they're not restricted here, but for those who are using sanitizers for commercial purposes, for those that are using them for HVAC systems, et cetera, that the licensing scheme that's in place right now would continue to apply to them. So we would be loosening things up a little bit for those who are using sanitizers for COVID-related experiences, but keeping in place the regulatory framework that is already in place. I understand the oral amendment that Senator Westrum is mentioning is something that's already reflected in the House. That is that agreement as I understand it. And if anybody has questions, I'm happy to answer them. I did speak with the Department of Agriculture yesterday and again this morning. And so I believe we have kumbaya, as they say.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And thank you for your work, Senator Murphy. I'm reluctant to move on anything unless I see it right in front of me in black and white. So, but anyway, Senator Westrum, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure which staff would have it to send around if we want to get it in front of us. If we want to hold off, I think we've got the language. We could quickly adopt it at the next future meeting. But otherwise, it would be ready if we just want to send it around quick. But whichever you feel most comfortable with.
I just soon put it off and then have a quick read of it at least, and then maybe we get that first on the agenda. And again, thank you, Senator Murphy, for your work on this. That'd be great. I'd like to hear that. What else was there for today?
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Greg Knopf again. I did, I was able to put together a new cottage food amendment, but I haven't heard if people want to offer that today or not. I just want to make sure that people know that there is an amendment available that's gone out to Representative Bang and others. That it could be offered today if they're comfortable with it.
I would defer to Samantha Vang, Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, I am just about just digested the amendment. I think once again just to. Maybe perhaps we can try again for tomorrow, just so that we can get it posted ahead for the public to see, and just circle back with staff and communicate any clarification with that. So I did see the amendment, but I think just to avoid another minor mishap earlier, that we can adopt it tomorrow. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. So it sounds like at our next meeting we can have for certain two of them that'll be solid to vote on. And I look forward to working on the garage guy thing and maybe three. So that'd be good progress at our next meeting. Senator Westrum, any comments on the next meeting here? You have the gavel tomorrow.
And Mr. Chair, I don't at this time. Seems like we've done a nice, good comprehensive review of everything. I do think it's probably good if we could have some meaningful exchanges of some proposals a little more broadly on the overall bill, especially the policy sides. Get that nailed down as much as we could, just back and forth through some proposals. Perhaps maybe we don't need a formal meeting till maybe Monday or Tuesday, but we could have a lot more ready at that time if we could spend some time negotiating through knowing a lot of the discussion we've heard and input. Sometimes we just need to work through those technical details, and that gets probably more productive if we could just trade some offers. But that'd be my thought at this point in time. And I know we get into the weekends, everybody's got other lives back in their districts and meetings and families obligations. And so I think that might be the best use of our time as we're seeing it from the Senate. But I think we've got some good items to start with that we've talked about. And I think we can have several more, hopefully, at our next meeting.
Thank you. I see Senator Murphy has her hand up. Senator Murphy, please. You are mute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to divulge too much, but I will say that there were some pumpkin Oreo cookies involved in some of the negotiation yesterday. So if we get stuck, there could be some assistance there in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. When I served on the Ag Committee a few years back, that was something I always look forward to is new testifiers and representatives bringing in the goodies. So my mailing address is 33 Thompson Road, Esko, Minnesota. That said, thank you, Senator Murphy. I tend to agree with the senator that maybe we could use the time more productively to hammer out a couple of these issues going forward, so we're not starting and stopping like we did on a couple of these measures today. So, again, the Senate has the gavel tomorrow. I would be in agreement to postpone any formal action until Monday of next week.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have no further comments.
It would be on tap for, I guess, 1 o'clock on Monday. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I think that'd be a good plan.
Senator Murphy has a hand up again or still? Okay, thank you. We're adjourned. Thank you.